In a world filled with war, hate, suffering, and Justin Bieber, two guys fix it all with a battle about a movie. One film, two opinions, one coin, two sides. They feud. You decide. It's time for Film Feud.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Film Feud, the podcast where we debate whether top-rated movies should be top-rated. I'm Vidur.
And I'm Vikram.
Hi, Vikram.
What's up?
Ready to feud today?
Yes.
Mind explaining to the good folk, our pleasant listeners, what we're doing here?
Sure, why not? We take a movie from the IMDb Top 250, we toss a coin, heads argues for and tails argues against.
Simple enough. And the movie we are feuding this week is none other than the first 3 hours of a 9-hour saga, but more if you watch the extended edition, Lord of the Rings, : The Fellowship of the Ring.
My precious.
Not bad. Not a bad Andy Serkis you got there.
Yeah. Andy Serkis, man. Although he's not there in this movie, I think, right?
Not in this one, I'm pretty sure. I haven't seen these movies in a long time. You?
I think in the previous decade is the last time I saw these movies.
And in the previous decade, I must confess, not the biggest fan. Didn't get the hoopla.
Oh, yeah? I'm sold, man. I'm sold on the Lord of the Rings universe. Read the books, read the extended universe books, seen these movies multiple times, The Hobbit as well. I mean...
Aha! Playing your cards today, Vikram. I can't
not do it, bro.
So, heavy stakes coin toss for you. Me?
Wait. Just to pull you back. Huh? You've read the books too. I know we went through this whole fanboy phase of Lord of the Rings where...
I read 900 pages out of the 1,000-something page book and abandoned it. Now, I'm not saying how I like those 900 pages, but I did abandon the book 900 pages into it. Listen, I haven't watched the movies in a long time. The book doesn't say anything about the movie necessarily. Let's just have a clean coin toss. Fair coin toss and evaluate where things are at.
Yeah, man, this one's kind of out there because unlike most episodes, I've come out and revealed what my true feelings with, well, Lord of the Rings in general are, so.
You're a fanboy and I am not. And this coin toss may determine how we feel about this movie this time around.
Yeah, let's do it. Let's toss that coin. So I'll be tossing the coin and again, heads argues for and tails argues against. My God, it's heads. All is fair in this world. Thank God.
The coin knows. The Film Feud coin doesn't let us down.
I'm so relieved right now. It's kind of unreal.
So am I, man. Listen, I'm going to give this movie a fair shot. I haven't seen it in a while. Maybe I'm grown up. Maybe I appreciate this stupid high fantasy.
So you're saying magically, now that you're against this movie, you'll appreciate it more. I don't think that's happening.
Well, is it magic or is it... elvish superpowers?
Yeah, let's go watch this movie.
I have no idea what I'm talking about.
I'm pretty stoked, man. I haven't seen these movies in a long time, or this movie in a long time specifically. I'm pretty excited to go rewatch this one.
All right, let's figure it out. Let's go watch this movie.
I am so glad I got to watch this movie again. Because I feel like I forgot how great it was. There's so many things about this movie that I noticed for the first time. Like the smaller things and stuff, I'm sure we'll get into it, but...
Yeah, maybe because it's impossible to notice things in a movie when it's 3 hours long.
I mean, I saw the extended cut, which is like 3 hours and 40 minutes almost.
Oh my God. That's like being waterboarded for 10 minutes instead of 8.
Waterboarded.
This movie's torture.
This movie's not torture, please.
This movie sucked my soul. It's unwatchable. I don't get it. I don't get how it's a thing. This movie's like... the first 3 hour act of a 9 hour movie, which is actually precisely what it is, and to pretend it's like a standalone good cinematic experience, that's crazy.
Dude, come on. Please, tone down. Because think about it. Firstly, is fantasy your thing or is it not at all? Like, a lot of people have preferences and stuff, right?
Are we talking about sexual fantasies?
No, we're not. We are not talking about sexual fantasies.
Because I have my own preferences, but The Lord of the Rings is not part of them for sure. So, well, actually, you never know. You never know. A good elvish woman here.
Stop it. Okay. Stop it. You're making me paint pictures in my mind, which I don't want.
This is the biggest mismatch between high critical rating and a movie watching experience that I have experienced on this feud so far.
That's literally blasphemy, dude. This movie, just aside from the whole fantasy side of things, right? Technically, as a movie, As a story, it's brilliant. It nails
everything. Story, it's firstly too simplistic and yet so slow, glacially slow. The story is that they're on the run and then they meet obstacles along the way. And it's first is one obstacle. It's those Dementor-like creatures, you know, on the horses. The horse Dementors. Ring Wraiths or whatever they call them. Yeah, let's just call them horse Dementors because it's much easier. And then, which also references a much better fantasy series, might I add. Which Barf. I'm sure you'll say is blasphemy also.
It is.
Then they have to experience like some cave trolls. Then like these orc creatures come. Then it's like humans. Then it's like dwarves. Then it's like fire demon. What is the genius story here?
Everything that you mentioned is something that he created from scratch. He made out of thin air. Like,
who are you talking about? Who's he?
J.R.R. Tolkien.
Yeah, so first, let's just establish, are you keep going to bring up the genius of the books?
I'm not going to bring up anything. I'm just saying as characters, what he established and what Peter Jackson brought to life with this movie.
There are no characters. The only thing you can give credit for is like the density of the world building. Ki ye bhi creatures hain, ye bhi creatures hain, ye bhi creatures hain. Some backstory of each, which I guess the movie fails to capture for half of them, does capture for
I think
some.
It captures perfectly in terms of... whichever character, whichever sort of species is shown in the movie, Jackson actually does a good job in terms of capturing an adequate backstory for those things.
Okay, like elves, like Aragorn and elves. Like they
Aragorn
just randomly,
and elves?
Aragorn randomly is into Liv Tyler, you know, and then they're like randomly getting
randomly?
Married. And then they're not. No, the backstory is, it's too rushed. I'm sure it's great in the books. Actually, I'm not.
Just to clarify something about this feud, right? I've read the books, you've read the books, we've seen all the movies.
I read the books 15, 16 years ago. It doesn't count.
Particularly for this feud, I'll be treating this movie as a standalone movie, assuming that nothing else exists.
Yeah, I agree. That's what I'm doing too. And that's why this movie doesn't hold up. The Ring itself, it's such a random, it's a MacGuffin. You know what a MacGuffin is, right?
It's the best MacGuffin. And it
so
is.
So you're admitting it's a MacGuffin.
Of course, it's a MacGuffin. Yeah, it helps the plot move forward. But think about it: the ring is actually the story. What the story revolves around. The ring is the central character of this movie.
Lord of the MacGuffin, the Mundus of the MacGuffin. That's what this movie should have been called.
I mean, sure, in like a Bhojpuri remake, that might, except for the word MacGuffin.
And just the fellowship. It's like four hobbits and five, like one of each, you know, species that exists. It's like a diversity hire, you know, into the fellowship for each.
Yeah.
And then there's four tiny hobbits. And can we just get to the hobbits?
Yeah.
My mind is buzzing with the rants I have about this movie.
Bring it.
What are hobbits? He wrote The Hobbit first, right? So he created some like hobbit world there.
Again, don't go back to the books. We're talking about Fellowship of the Ring, the movie.
Okay. What are hobbits? They're
hobbits
tiny
are...
humans. They're little people. They're
bitches. Yeah, they are. Yeah.
And then why is that a separate thing from, like, are they just hungrier than humans? What are their characteristics?
They're peace loving. They don't like adventure. They like their simple life, farming, growing crops, eating them, napping. That's all they want. The simple life. That's all they are.
And they have a weird resistance to shoes.
I mean, they don't wear shoes. What's the big deal in that? I can't believe we're talking about this right now, don't wear shoes. Ooh.
So much energy goes, and they're very hungry all the time, right? Like second breakfast, third breakfast.
Yeah, they like eating, man.
So much energy goes into this establishing of hobbits, and then that whole forced perspective thing that Peter Jackson got a lot of credit for, right? Because Gandalf is like twice the size of the hobbits, essentially.
Yeah.
And so much filmmaking craft goes into hobbits.
Dude, special effects, Oscar.
No. Just make them the same height. What's the big deal?
I mean, that's not how they're made. That's why make them the same height? For what purpose?
Because it's so weird. Like, why are they
It's short? Actually, it's actually brilliant to see a huge differentiation physically as well as just sort of in terms of character building of how these different creatures sort of come together and become the fellowship. I think it's brilliant. And the way he's shown it is even more brilliant.
They're all the same creatures. I can tell they're human. The movie didn't do a good job of doing that. Maybe actually the second and third movie do it better. But
forget the second and third movie. You actually thought the dwarf looked like a human?
Yeah.
You actually thought the orcs looked like humans? You actually thought all of these looked like humans?
Shah Rukh Khan's upcoming movie Zero, where he plays a little person, that did it better than this.
What are you fucking talking about, dude? What are you fucking talking about? You're pissing me off. What the fuck is Shah Rukh Khan and Zero got to do with anything? We're talking about Lord of the Rings. Give it due respect, all right? Otherwise, there's going to be some real feuding outside.
Gandalf's... Oh, Jesus. Physical violence I'm being threatened with. That's not very Hobbit-like of you.
Yeah, don't bring Shah Rukh Khan and... What the fuck? Zero, dude. What are you talking about?
Gandalf's relative height to the hobbits and the different creatures keeps changing. And Gandalf the Grey, or as I would like to call him from now on, Magneto the Pothead, is he addicted to weed in the movie?
No.
That was... Yeah, that was just thrown out of nowhere. Because first he's smoking weed with Bilbo Baggins and they actually call it weed, which actually struck me as weird.
The hobbits like weed, yeah.
Okay, the hobbits like weed. But Gandalf likes weed as well.
Only when he's with the hobbits.
Okay, when he's with the hobbits. And then Samaran...
Or
the...
Bilbo specifically, just to correct you there.
Okay, whatever. And then Samaran, the evil white wizard, he's like...
Saruman,
whatever, Salman. And then he tells him, yeah, can we just call him Salman? Much easier. Because at least it makes it entertaining in my head to imagine Salman playing.
As long as you don't bring up Shah Rukh Khan in Zero again, because then I swear, I punch you.
Okay, I won't. But Magneto the Pothead, whose beard, by the way, looks fake as fuck.
Really? I actually thought it looked very authentic.
Of course you did, because you're a fan.
No, really.
And you'd be convinced by anything.
Also, you're just bringing up stupid nitpicks because you have nothing constructive to argue against with this movie.
Of course I do.
Bring it.
Okay. Here's a real point, okay? Storytelling-wise, structure-wise, filmmaking-wise.
Right.
This movie has one of the worst calls to action for the hero, who, by the way, is embarking on like a 10-hour movie saga that I've ever seen. Remember Luke's call to action in Star Wars? His aunt and uncle are like... burned to a crisp like bacon.
Yeah, there's a 30-second sort of character turn.
Yeah, okay. And then he stares at two suns and his wind blows his
hair. And he's like, I'm coming with you.
Okay, yeah, well, at least that's like an inciting incident. What is the inciting incident here? Gandalf just turning like all freaky and being like, you must. That's it?
No, it's also him realizing how powerful the ring actually is, right?
How? Because he slips and the ring goes up into the air
and
onto his finger by mistake. Can we just talk about that a moment? You know, the last time you slipped and your ring flew up into the air and then it slipped
I don't
your
own one, so I can't really say.
You're missing out, man.
I'm actually talking about him interacting with Gandalf and actually realizing how powerful the ring is and then him understanding that he's probably the only one who can take the ring. See, the ring is the central character, right? And
no, it's not. Stop the
ring,
saying that.
The ring is the character, dude. It's all about the ring.
What does the ring do?
What do you mean, what does the ring do?
It has the soul of Sauron.
Yeah.
But what does it do?
It binds. So, did you skip over the first 5 minutes?
I didn't skip over jack shit.
Okay, so basically...
One ring to rule them all, one ring to bind them, and whatever the fuck.
So, okay. So, basically, 9 rings were made, right? 3 given to the elves. Or actually, more rings were made, right?
Ah, you got it wrong. 9 rings were given to men.
Nine rings
become the Wraith.
Yeah, they become the Nazgul. And then 3 were given to the elves and all. And Sauron actually made this one ring that would rule all of them. So that this ring is the most powerful ring of all.
Yeah, but what is the power of the ring?
It can...
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
This ring literally is actually... because we can't see the actual power until Sauron ultimately gets it. Or if he does, I don't know. But what they talk about is that this ring will allow Sauron to rule all of Middle-earth.
How? What does the ring do?
It makes
the bearer invisible. Yeah,
No. So the ring is only bound to Sauron. Sauron is the only one who can wield the actual power of the ring.
Okay, so there we go. The MacGuffin actually is not even clarified like what the ring can do.
It's not. They can't just clarify what the ring's actual powers are within the first 10 to 20 minutes of the movie or even within this movie.
That's what I mean. This movie is supposed to be standalone. He's doing tell, not show. Everything is tell, not show. The elves have ruled for millennia and now we must leave. Why? Like, it's not tell, not show.
Sorry, I actually disagree. It's not tell, not show. It's actually tell.
It's okay. There's no need to be sorry.
It's fine. I'm just a nice guy. Yeah. It's not tell, not show. It's tell and show little by little by little by little. And that's how the story progresses and keeps you immersed in it, man. I was lost in this the first time I saw it, obviously. And I was
this time
as well.
I agree with you.
In a good way.
Nope. There's no such thing as being lost in a good way.
Dude, come on, man. This sort of movie just gives you this feeling of like innocence and just like getting just lost in that fantasy world, which me as a 30-year-old adult still does. It's fascinating that a movie like this was made, and Peter Jackson, dude, oh my god.
Yeah, we'll get to Peter Jackson because he got so much praise for this. Again, maybe the second and third movies are great, but this movie getting 13 Oscar nominations, that's blasphemy.
Really?
And it won 4 Oscars, or as I like to say, it lost 9 Oscars. Not many movies can claim to have done that. There's a reason for that.
Yeah, I mean, the 4 it won were thoroughly deserved. Score and cinematography and special effects and I think it was costume or makeup, one of those.
I don't know. I don't care. I mean, Ian McKellen was nominated for his role as Gandalf. He is a Shakespearean actor. Magneto, the character and the dynamics with another Shakespearean actor, Patrick Stewart, brings out the powerhouse of acting that these two people are. This movie, it's like he's in a Ramlila. That's all he's doing.
That's the biggest crock of shit I've ever heard.
He's embarrassing
himself. You think
Magneto's
performance was better than Gandalf's performance.
Gandalf is embarrassing himself.
Are you serious?
Thou shall not pass. Ugh,
oh, it's God, so bro. Sad. That's actually...
Yeah, man. Because if you think about India, right? Like, everybody in India gets kind of a crack at some, like, mythological character to play someone. You know, but the US in general, like, Western countries are pretty weak on mythology. So, except for Greece, probably. So, this is their mythology. This is the shit that J.R.R. Tolkien came up with. And it appealed to that little part, you know, the little part of people that want that mythological stuff to be true. You know, the thing that India really thrives on.
No, I don't know.
You don't know?
No.
That's why Mahabharata was so popular. That's why Ramayana is so popular. This is like Lord of the Ramayana, you know?
Oh, God. You dug deep for that one, man.
Dude,
just like struggling to find something.
Do you remember the 1989-90s Mahabharata?
Of course I do.
This is what I felt.
Mahabharata.
Not bad.
Yeah.
Not bad.
Yeah.
This is exactly what Ian McKellen's doing.
Yeah.
He's playing like his Pandava role.
I don't think you remember the 1989-1990s Mahabharata.
Ian McKellen is basically like, this is his Dhritarashtra.
Dhritarashtra?
Yeah.
Nice. Dhritarashtra was... How is Dhritarashtra like, comparable here? Do you know who Dhritarashtra was?
I have no idea.
Clearly, yeah.
Dude, it doesn't matter. I mean, Peter Jackson got so much love for this. I just don't get how.
How do you not get it, dude? The nuts on that guy to make something like this in 2001. Some cojones that guy has, dude.
From what? From a VFX perspective?
And just the magnitude of this movie, the cast, the story, bringing everything to life. Obviously, in my opinion, books are always better than the movies. Always, always. There's no justice that can be done to a good book in the form of a movie. And this is the
That's
only movie
so
series
true.
That comes close. I haven't read any book. Which...
Godfather. Ah, see, I came locked and loaded.
No, because those movies take a little different turn in terms of the part two and part three. But the Godfather book is actually pretty damn good. Have you read it?
Yeah, but a long time ago, but I like the movie more for sure. Anyway, let's not get distracted, okay? Every time the dumb horses come with the Dementors, with the what was
Nazgul.
I calling them? No, but what was I calling them?
Nazgul, you're calling them Nazgul.
Dementor horses. Operatic music kicks in every time. And the first hour of this movie, they're the big band, which actually brings me to a more important direction point, like storytelling-wise. Who is the villain of this movie? There is no good antagonist. Samura... whatever his name is. Salman Khan is basically just doing shit from a distance.
Hmm.
Right? And Sauron is just this... I had to look up this word. Yonic. Eye in the sky. Do you know what yonic means?
No.
It's the female of phallic.
Okay.
Do you get what I'm saying?
No.
He looks like a vagina, dude.
Okay.
Sauron.
I just wanted you to say that. Sauron is clearly the central antagonist of this movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
By central, you mean vaginal.
Jesus, you're disgusting, dude. I mean, come on, dude. How can Sauron not be the clear antagonist in your head?
Because he's just like a wisp in the sky.
That's also,
like
he's not physically around to fuck shit up, so he's not the antagonist.
I'll give you the perfect analogy. That's like saying the antagonist of Prisoner of Azkaban is Voldemort. No, he's not. He's just like some big bad out in the distance, right?
Prisoner of Azkaban is different because those movies or those books were written as standalone books and movies. This was written as one big story.
The analogy
and the movies
still
were
holds.
Made. No, the movies were made as one big movie. It's just like Gangs of Wasseypur, for example.
Oh, so you're saying Sauron will eventually be the villain?
No, even in this movie, Sauron's very clearly the antagonist. It's everything's to stop Sauron from world domination from the get-go.
But who do the protagonists actually interact with, right? Like the boss of the big bad is not going to be the antagonist of a movie where the protagonists take on the big bad.
I understand, and I can't believe I'm saying this again. It's the ring. It's the ring that is the conduit between the physical being, which is Sauron, and Sauron, which is the eye in the sky.
Just call the ring the MacGuffin, and then you realize how stupid it sounds to say the antagonist is the MacGuffin.
No, the antagonist is Sauron, and it's personified or objectified via the ring. It's so clear. I don't understand why it's not making sense.
It's just a MacGuffin, dude. The antagonists are like the horse dementors. Then it's like the cave troll. The cave troll scene, man. How long are they fighting that stupid cave troll?
Oh, dude, Mines of Moria.
Yeah, in the Mines of Moria, it's just like an exercise in showing like, oh, look what my digital studio can do. And by the way, I do give them credit. For 2001, it was quite comparable to 2015's Batman versus Superman because Doomsday looked exactly like the cave troll.
Yeah, I mean, that's not a good comparable. And it was also like 14 years later. But it was 2001, they blew it out of the park, man, with the special effects.
Yeah, this was the birth of Weta Digital, right?
Yeah, it was. And it also allowed, like, it showed basically how special effects can be used in movies, man. He completely redefined the whole situation in terms of what visual aspects can be incorporated in a movie.
I give him a lot of credit for special effects broadly. I think most of them are wasted in this movie because it's not a good movie. And also, he focused too much on the special effects. That made him not a good director. It's kind of like George Lucas in the prequel series. Like, all the focus was on special effects. And Industrial Light and Magic actually came out of the same way, right? It was born out of the movies itself. And now Industrial Light and Magic and Weta Digital are the two biggest special effects studios. So, okay, props to the special effects. But what about the story? The first hour antagonist, I don't care if you say it's Sauron or the Ring, are the Nazgul, I can't even say the word. Ring Wraiths? It's like a tongue twister.
Yeah, I mean, Nazgul. Why can't you call them Nazgul?
Nazgul. Firstly, every time I saw them, I was like, just use a Patronus charm. That's what was going through my head. Okay.
Right.
And then they're supposed to be the scary big bad. Five of them descend onto Frodo when Aragorn is just gone for a walk or something. Or Strider? Is that the same thing? Right? At the time in the movie, Strider?
Yeah, I mean, it's Aragorn. You know it's Aragorn. We can call him Aragorn.
Yeah, the Strider dude, Aragorn. And then Aragorn comes and single-handedly defeats five of them. How dumb was that?
Or just shoos them away for the time being.
Well, he like fires one in the face and then he like swords like three more away.
Mm-hmm.
How dumb was that? What a stake crusher of how big bad a villain is.
Up until that point, they weren't really established in terms of how big or bad they were. They were just given a little bit of history in terms of those were the nine men. Because of the rings, they turned crazy and they become his servants. So we actually did not see what their real power was. And we don't see it in this movie actually at all.
After the stakes are defeated with Aragorn defeating five of them, they still are made out to be the big bad. They still chase Liv Tyler on the horse.
Yeah. And then they get swept away.
That's bad storytelling. That's bad direction to actually reduce the stakes of your villain. By the way, till that point, there's no other villain, right? It's not even like Salman Khan is interacting with them. It's not like Sauron
is present all the time. Sauron is very clearly defined as the villain. All of these are very clearly known to be the minions of Sauron. I also don't think that he overly relied on special effects in this movie. Just as a standalone movie, right? As a piece of movie making, technically, it's really high up there with the best, right?
No.
And of course it is, dude. And as a story also, in terms of like characters, it touches all the right chords emotionally. There's anger, there's sorrow. All of this is happening apart from the special effects side of things. I see all of that happening in this movie, especially with the second view.
Do you give credit to Peter Jackson for that? I mean, J.R.R. Tolkien probably took care of that, right? In his books. So adapting it, I don't give much credit. The fact that the story contains so much.
Sorry, just to get back to that point, I've read the books, right? And I want to consciously...
Ooh, I've read the books.
So have you.
I knew this was going to come up. I've read the books, right? Oh, by the way, the books are all...
And I consciously don't want to bring the books in this feud. You, just to answer your point about J.R.R. Tolkien, quote-unquote, took care of the script. No, he didn't. There's a lot of difference between the books and the movies and how situations are panned out. He wrote a script specially for this movie, and I think it does a really good job in terms of picking up all of the good stuff from the books, leaving aside the stuff that doesn't make for a good movie-going experience, and stitching it all together to make this film. It's so good.
Dude, it's not accessible. Like, the way they talk, like at one point he's wearing this elvish armor. This is, Mithril. And then he's like, he is Aragorn, son of Barathon, heir of Isildur, king of Munduland. I mean, the words they keep using. Okay, you know what? I designed a test for you.
So you would prefer to say if his name was Steve, son of Roger?
Exactly that. Yeah. At least make
Jesus,
it accessible.
No imagination, man.
Just making a word. Okay, I'm going to name four things.
Mm-hmm.
And you tell me which one of these is not part of The Lord of the Rings.
Okay, that's fun.
This particular movie.
Okay, that's fun. These four things are from the movies only?
Yeah.
No like books or extended wiki shit that you're pulling on me right now?
No, I'm actually going to make this really easy for you, but it will illustrate my point.
Okay.
Okay.
Can't wait.
A Mithril, a Gabrol, a Baclajot, and an Amrukar.
An Amrukar. Interesting. What's the second one?
I forgot.
Never mind that.
Yeah, let's hear it.
What was the second one?
Gabrol. Gabrol. It was a Gabrol.
I think Mithril was the only thing that was actually true, and you made up three of them, right? Didn't you do that with
That's true.
Trying to pull a fast one on me?
But I made it easy for you because I made it Mithril. But they all sound like they could be. That's my point. It's so stupid. I hate fantasy, which just goes on and on.
See,
just
I think that's the core of it. You just hate fantasy in general, man. How do you like Harry Potter then? It's the same thing. They're just making shit up.
Because it's well written.
It's not well written.
It has logic.
It's a children's storybook and that's how it's written.
This is like an academic storybook.
Yeah, sure. I'll take that.
Aha. Uh-huh. See, we find common ground.
Aha. Uh-huh. There's no aha needed there. I feel like you're just waiting for an aha to just release one and you found no points, so you just said it.
Dude, I have so many aha points. Why don't they just ride the eagles to Mordor?
Why don't they just ride the eagles to Mordor?
Gandalf has access to flying vehicles.
Because then...
And he makes them go barefoot through hills.
Yeah.
Through snow-capped mountains.
Yeah.
Ride the damn eagles.
What do you mean, ride the damn eagles?
Gandalf rode an eagle to get out of his, like, tower situation, right?
Right.
So then take Frodo on an eagle and just, bloom, drop the ring. Like, airdrop the ring, like a package.
I mean, you don't know what Mount Doom is structured like. You don't know if that can happen or not. How can you just assume that it's going to happen?
If I remember correctly, this is a big sore point by, like, Lord of the Rings fans, where even in the end... Eagles do go on Mount Doom. Is that right?
Okay, we're going to the Return of the King. Yes, they do. But by that time, the ring is already destroyed and Sauron's pretty much done
for. Oh, so the ring creates an anti-eagle shield around Mount Doom.
No. They destroy the ring and the eagles come to rescue them from Mount Doom, which is getting blown up because all of Mordor is getting blown up.
Are you actually trying to justify why they couldn't ride the eagles? Maybe it's just a last
judgment.
Yes,
I am. And just to clarify here, you brought the third movie into this.
It's like Chekhov's eagle, bro. If you show a giant flying eagle, then you might as well use it. In the third book, for instance, of Harry Potter, Prisoner of Azkaban, they show a hippogriff, which is a flying thing you can sit on, so that they actually use it. It's bad filmmaking to show something like
that. I think that's lazy filmmaking that they did.
What are you saying?
This movie is supposed to be a first part of three movies, right? So it leaves a little to the imagination in terms of, oh, this could also happen, this could also happen. Let's wait for the second movie and see how it unfolds.
No, you can't get away with any stupid thing in the movie by saying it will magically be resolved in the second and third. It's supposed to be standalone.
It's not supposed to be standalone. Of course, it's supposed to be part one of a trilogy.
It should be enjoyable standalone. It shouldn't raise ridiculous questions that don't make any sense.
Ridiculous is a heavy-handed word for, oh, eagle kyun nahi leke Mordor chale gaye.
You tell me what is lazy filmmaking.
Okay.
Gandalf is stuck on top of the tower, Salman Khan's tower.
Isengard.
We need something to get him off. Okay, flying eagles, because I must have been part of the book at some point. But then, when people need to actually go somewhere, they don't realize that it actually renders the whole journey moot.
No, so they take pains in terms of showing how carefully Sauron is just scouring the land in terms of finding all of these people. If he sees flying eagles with hobbits on them and he realizes the ring is on them, he'd probably take that eagle down, won't he?
Ugh.
Isn't that lazy filmmaking?
You just have some lazy explanation.
It's not a lazy explanation. It's perfectly normal. They're going under the cover of darkness and they're traveling through uncharted paths and stuff so that Sauron doesn't notice them. If they're on a fucking flying eagle flying all across Middle Earth towards Mordor, you think Sauron would notice that?
Why are you talking about this as though it's like in the real world it makes logical sense? Who knows what...
You're trying to insert logic into this. I'm just giving you a logical answer to that. That's all that is.
Nope. Disagree. Agree to disagree.
Nope. Disagree. Sure. I'll use that one.
Why don't we get back to the direction and the characters, okay? Okay.
Bring it.
Where's the tension in the movie? Frodo has plot armor. Obviously, it's the first part of three parts, right? It's not Game of Thrones here, which I haven't brought up yet, actually, which is a mistake of mine. But it's not like Game of Thrones when anybody can be killed. You know Frodo's going to make it. Yet at three points in the movie, all the dramatic tension comes from the fact that Frodo has been stabbed. Frodo has been stabbed again, where he's literally wearing armor, not just plot armor. Or Frodo's about to die. Or Ned Stark, which, by the way, Ned Stark is in this movie, and he dies as usual, Sean Bean, which I found
hilarious.
One
must not disrespect Ned Stark.
Right, I'm aware of the meme that you're referring to. Hilarious that he dies again, poor soul. What's his name in the movie again?
Boromir.
Sounds like a medicine. I forgot that was his name, yeah. Okay, then Boromir
I'm taking offense to all of this, by the way.
Boromir is about to, like, take the ring. All the dramatic tension comes from Frodo almost dying, which is so weak. Apart from the one moment where Gandalf dies. And I know he comes back, which is also weak. So much about this movie annoys me.
He doesn't come back in this movie. He's dead.
He comes back. Oh, now that's standalone. He comes back.
No, we're talking about this movie as the feud, yeah? You're mixing the context of using this as a standalone film in terms of the movie that it was made.
Okay,
we're talking about it from the feud's perspective.
Apart from Gandalf dying, all the dramatic tension in this movie comes from Frodo dying. Supposedly.
No,
which we know he can't.
You're talking about like those high octane tension building scenes, but there's a lot of dramatic turns that come in terms of Arwen giving up her immortality, what the rings actually...
Who gives a shit about that? Nobody knows who she is. It happens within like the third scene that she's around with no context given. That's also bad filmmaking. Who cares?
And then there's so much in terms of the way Ring tests each, like all of these people one by one, Galadriel and Gandalf and Boromir. And it actually goes to show the power of the ring. I think that's all very good dramatic effect that he's used brilliantly.
Yeah, okay. But even the highest points of dramatic tension, there's a reason in Harry Potter, it's always not Harry Potter dying. You know, because we know that the books are called Harry Potter and you know there's going to be 7 books. It's the same thing. It's a lapse in judgment here to keep having Frodo almost die. Now, I would have really respected it if Game of Thrones style, they actually at some point kill Frodo, which I know doesn't happen. But it is quite stupid to keep putting a protagonist at risk as like the source of tension. That's really weak.
That's not weak. That's standard, if not
it's
anything.
It's standard. It's not great. It's average, like weak.
But then it's what you build on top of the standard that makes for a great film, right?
No.
Like Galadriel losing it in that one scene. Like that shivers, Brad. Even rewatching it gave me shivers.
I have no idea who Galadriel is. But because you said losing it, I'm guessing you mean Cate Blanchett.
Cate Blanchett, yes.
That was so editable. Edit this movie. Edit this movie down to like 2 hours of watchable shit. Take away one whole sequence of villains, firstly. We don't need the orcs and the Uruk-hais and the Nazgul and the cave troll, which also I'm sure has a better name than cave troll.
I think it's cave troll.
Okay. And the Balrog, which is
Balrog,
basically...
Balrog, dude.
It's the demon monster from Thor Ragnarok, right?
Huh?
It looks like that fire monster at the end of Thor Ragnarok. The Balrog guy.
I'm blanking on Thor Ragnarok, unfortunately.
The guy who Hulk like jumps against.
I don't care. I don't even want to pursue this right now.
Let's call the cave troll Doomsday. Just take away one of these. Edit this movie. And I can't believe you watched the extended cut. 3 hours.
I took a vow. Like I'm only going to watch extended cuts whenever I watch Lord of the Rings. And oh my God. Worth it.
Or make it a TV show. Which...
Ooh, dude. That would be so sick.
Okay. I've hinted towards this many times. Let's just get down to brass tacks here. Game of Thrones did it so much better.
Game of Thrones did nothing better.
Game of Thrones is doing it so much better.
Game of Thrones is politics.
It's amazing politics.
It's a political drama.
It's evolved.
Set in some fantasy world. Yeah, yeah, that's all there is.
And look at where it is in season 6 and 7 now.
But there's no comparable to Game of Thrones to Lord of the Rings. Just because it's fantasy did it better. Harry Potter did it better. I know all your did it betters already.
There's no comparison between Lord of the Rings and Game of Thrones.
No, not much.
Really? So the whole world is just stupid. They're always comparing.
No, it's just, I feel like there's just so much lifted, in fact, from Lord of the Rings for Game of Thrones.
Okay, so Lord of the Rings might be the inspiration for Game of Thrones in many ways. I'm pretty sure George R.R. Martin admits to that. He's probably like the biggest Tolkien fan there is. Haven't you read both books?
I've read it all. Just to seek some clarification, did what better?
Just did the world building better? Did the storytelling better, man? Even if the world building is more dense with Tolkien, it's the storytelling that matters, right? Like when it's more about politics, it's more about things we care more about as humans. You know, we can actually relate and resonate to a war between families and the cost of like thousands of like soldiers dying. More than we can, like, some orc army against some elvish battalion.
I agree. You said we can relate to more as humans. That means it's less fantasy, right? I love fantasy. And fantasy, for me, is something that I don't want to relate as a human being or whatever happens around me. So that way, Lord of the Rings did it way, way better. I actually think that's a big problem with the Game of Thrones TV shows. Again, not talking about the books at all, but I think character building is very weak in Game of Thrones in terms of...
What?
Yeah, I think it's very weak because it doesn't do justice to what those characters are supposed to be and where they're coming from and all of that. So a lot of them are just thrown into the mix and given a scene or two in terms of backstory to establish how sinister or evil or whatever they are.
It's better than having random cameos where, again, this is the first movie, right? So it's standalone. So like a Cate Blanchett cameo here... A Hugo Weaving. I felt really bad for Hugo Weaving. He looked like really miscast in that role as like the Elvish King, whatever his name is.
Elrond? Really? Elrond. I thought that was perfect.
Oh, of course you thought it was perfect. He's just like so uncomfortable. And then at one point he goes, welcome to, what's the name of the place? Rivendell?
Yeah.
He's like, welcome.
Pretend you don't know.
I know, because I kept hearing it as Riverdale. I wrote it down as like Riverdale the first time.
Right.
So when he says it, he's like, welcome to Rivendell, Mr. Baggins. And I swear, until the party said Mr., I thought he was going to say Anderson. It's just like, that was going through my head, like, welcome to Riverdale, Mr. Anderson. And I was like, oh, poor Hugo Weaving, man. Mr. Smith is reduced to this, like...
Really? I think he did a pretty impressive job to branch out from the...
He didn't have a job to do.
No, not just in this movie, but generally as an actor. He's done a tremendous job in terms of... Because those sort of characters pigeonhole you in terms of your perceived capability as an actor. But he did pretty well, man. V for Vendetta and this movie, these movies and all. I think he's done a pretty good job.
Red Skull.
Red Skull, whatever. I mean, not
do you,
really.
Do you have any concessions at all, by the way?
No, I don't, unfortunately, man.
Are you serious?
Yeah, yeah.
Are you serious?
I mean, I'll try to dig deep, dude.
Have
but
some shame.
Have some shame that I don't have a concession for this wonderful, wonderful movie. Not at all, dude.
Wow, saying it twice must really make it true.
Yeah.
My one concession that I've already mentioned is that I enjoyed Ned Stark dying. That's always fun to watch.
How's that a concession?
I enjoyed it. It's one of the few things I enjoyed.
Oh, so if you enjoy something in this movie, you have to concede to it?
Pretty much. Are you willing to concede the opposite still?
I have a half concession.
Fine.
So when I remember watching these movies, I wasn't the biggest fan of Elijah Wood. But after rewatching, I kind of understood the sort of direction he took with his acting. Like initially when I'd seen it...
Wait a minute. Are you actually going to go pro the movie in your concession?
Yeah.
That's not a concession.
Half concession, I said it.
How's that a half concession?
So let me complete, na? Can I talk?
Not if you're
Can
going
my
the
views
direction.
Be expressed on the show?
No, not if you're going the direction where you like give the interview answer where your greatest weakness is actually your greatest strength. I'm not interested in concessions like that.
Okay, I don't care what you're interested in. So basically, when I saw these movies initially, right, Elijah Wood always just seem so like dazed and like unhappy and like just so like...
As though he's a bad actor and he's acting badly.
I've never been a fan of him, right? And even in these movies, I wasn't the biggest fan. I thought everyone else around him did a wonderful job. But then I rewatched this movie and I sort of understood, like, I don't want to give him full credit still. I still don't think he did the best job. Maybe someone else in his role could have done much better. But you notice the nuances of why he's acting that way, how much power the ring has over him, especially after you see the ring being tested on all these powerful people like Gandalf and Galadriel and stuff, right? And them openly saying that I will turn the dark side if I take control of this ring.
Bilbo are basically too dumb to know what to do with it. That's the feeling I got.
No, so what they make sure to sort of push across is that why Frodo's the best person to become the ring bearer is because he doesn't want worldly pressure. He doesn't want world domination. These hobbits are simple people, simple creatures who want a simple life. So to corrupt them is going to be the toughest thing to do. So,
well, clearly you can do it. It just takes a while. A.K.A. Bilbo.
A.K.A. Smeagol as well, right? I mean,
Smeagol is not a part of this movie. Please remove him from your thoughts and arguments. Thanks.
No, so they talk about Smeagol and they talk about how he was very close to what a hobbit could have been also, right? So, but it took like so many years to ruin him. Gandalf talks about Smeagol's backstory. So,
what was it, like 500 years or something?
Yeah, I don't remember the exact number, man. So that, I sort of put that into perspective with Elijah Wood's acting and I give him some pro points there, but I still think that he was the weakest link in terms of acting all throughout these series.
I think all the other hobbits were the weakest link. The worst first part of a trilogy ever made. And I'm counting Twilight when I say that.
Twilight's a trilogy?
I think it's actually a quadrilogy.
Have you seen all of them?
I have.
Invalid answer.
I have.
Shut the fuchsia up, okay? As a story, dude, this movie, like, nothing comes close. I think it's one of the best movies. Obviously, the best movie series of all time.
I think the actors are just embarrassing themselves.
Yeah, I think you are embarrassing yourself.
The only actor who can walk out of this movie with his head held high, Andy Serkis. Who was, like, in the movie for, like, 2 seconds. I'm surprised he even got a credit.
Dude, then you're gonna love The Two Towers.
Oh, man, what have I done here?
My precious.
Please don't make me watch it. We're not feuding The Two Towers.
And that was this week's episode of Film Feud. Hope you guys enjoyed.
Thank you for listening. Hope it wasn't as much of a drag as Lord of the Rings, Fellowship of the Ring.
It definitely wasn't, and neither was the movie. The feud's over. Shut the fuck up, Vidur.
Oh, the feud's over. My bad.
Hope you guys enjoyed. Now we feud and you guys get to decide who you think won this week's feud. You can vote for us on Film Feud, Instagram or Twitter at Film Feud Pod.
Also, you can find us on iTunes, YouTube, our website, munchamedia.com or pretty much wherever you find podcasts.
Until next week.
Bye-bye.